How's it going and welcome to episode 34 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by the current reigning TGFBI champion, Kevin Hasting, who of course can and should be followed on the Twitter at Hasting Kevin. Make sure to follow up this episode by reading Kevin's weekly fab recommendation and preview article over at Pitcher List, which comes out every Sunday afternoon. Kevin, I'm sorry to say, I had to say reigning. This looks like the final week that you may be able to call yourself the reigning TGFBI champion, at least until you win it again, maybe next year. But, you know, I'm curious to know if, are you, Clay, Todd, are you ready to welcome a new member into your very exclusive club?
Of course. I don't really want to speak for Clay and Todd, but I can only assume so. They were more than gracious to me. It's exciting. There is 1 week to go. We keep grinding, but I don't think I'm going to make up 330 some spots.
Hey, I'm looking at the standings now. There's a couple of decent swings out there right now. A couple 20, 30, 40 point swings in one day. You never know. Don't count it out completely. But good luck to everybody who is still in the running there. There's a couple of very well-known analysts out there and a couple of names out there that are making a really good name for themselves in their running right now. Luckily, we have somebody with us to finish off the fab period, the final fab period of 2021 that really needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him a nice long one anyway. That is Derek Van Riper. He joins us to close out the season, breaking down all of the options we may have out there to chip away that 1 week worth of counting stats in your totals. DVR is the podcast executive producer over at The Athletic. It can be heard pretty much on any baseball podcast The Athletic puts out, including Rates and Barrels, Fantasy Baseball in 15, and the Fantasy Baseball Podcast. He does other sports too, but we'll try to hold on to baseball as long as we can. All right. So you make sure you check out all of DVR's writing and podcasting over at The Athletic. Course, you should be followed on the Twitter at Derek Van Riper for added insight and updates. There'll be a link to all of that in the show description, so check that out. A little later in the show, we'll talk to DVR about things that he's learned or was reminded of from doing fab during a full season and what he's taking away from 2021 that might help him adjust for 2022. But for now, Derek, thanks for joining us for the final regular season episode. How's this season been treating you with only 1 week left?
I saw the great piece that Travis Sawchik wrote about the season that Phil Dussel is having now in the NFBC. It's just a screen of all ones in very competitive high stakes leagues, which I've never seen before. And I think even the very best players we know are very impressed by what Phil's been able to do and hopefully holds on, because I don't know if anyone will ever do it again. I think that's a pretty amazing thing to see. But if I compare myself to Phil, I have not had a good year. No one has. In a couple of my keeper leagues, actually, it's been my year. I'm doing really well in a mixed keeper league that I actually run. And I have an AL-only keeper league I played in for about 6 or 7 years now that I've never won. And I've got a shot to win that. Redraft, it's been more of like teams that are in the upper third, upper half, that with a good final week, maybe I'll cash in one or two of them. But this has not been a great year for me across the board. It's been just an average one.
Let me ask you a question. Would you rather be in this situation where you've been like middling and then you have an opportunity in the last week to jump into that cash, or where you've been at the top of a league pretty much all season? Because I've got two leagues right now where I've been at the top of my league almost all season, and then I find myself going into the final week down in third. So I'm still cashing in these leagues, but it felt so much stronger all season, and now I have to scrape just to hold on to that spot. I'm curious to know, where would you rather be?
I guess I'd rather, if the actual odds are equal, I'd rather be ascending than trying to just hold somebody off. Something about expectations are lower when you're chasing than when you had that lead longer. I feel like I'm more disappointed in myself to lose a lead, to lose a hold on a cash position, than I am to, you know, pick that up in the final days of the season. But those teams are more similar than we think. Our minds just trick us into thinking that one spot is better than the other.
Yeah, you just feel like you're climbing the mountain instead of being pushed over the side.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to get right into a very short news and notes section of the pod. Of course, we try to keep our news and notes relevant to what might affect your fab bidding for this coming Sunday night. Kevin, I'm going to start with you in San Diego. Austin Nola was placed on the IL with a thumb strain and will miss the remainder of the season. curious, do you think that Victor Caratini can fill in for the majority of play behind the plate, or will Webster Rivas, who was called up from Triple A to take Nola's place on the roster, split time in the final week behind home plate?
I really don't think it matters. I know in 15-team, two-catcher leagues, we're interested in what's going to happen here, but Victor Caratini hasn't hit a home run since June. This has been okay in his playing time this season. I kind of think it's probably going to be split with Caratini, probably with a slight edge. If I'm in a 15-team, two-catcher league, I'm looking at Nick Fortes. I'll just completely change your question here. And he's not getting a ton of at-bats. They have four catchers on the 28-man roster right now, but he's hitting over 500 after the couple of hits he has tonight. He's not going to sustain that, but anything close to it for one more week, I'd much rather take a chance with someone like that if I'm desperate for a catcher in a deep league.
Yeah, I appreciate when I put on a question on this rundown that obviously you don't really care too much about, and you find a way to make it interesting. So I appreciate that. All right. And DVR, I heard you talking about Edmundo Sosa on one of your recent podcasts. So we'll head over to St. Louis and talk about him. He was struck on the hand during Friday's game and immediately ran into the locker room. Assuming this keeps the St. Louis starting shortstop out for a majority of the week, or any time at all, do you see any other Cardinal magic being used on his replacement?
Yeah, I guess Paul DeJong, kind of a forgotten guy this year because it's been a bad season for him overall. Of course, he comes in, homers in the doubleheader on Friday because that's how the Cardinals are running right now. It's just so fun to root for other teams in the NL Central and watch them pull this off every year. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if DeJong finally hit more the way we expected him to. I think he's just a league average hitter who gives us below average batting average, kind of a mediocre OBP, but has legit power. I think that 30 home run season he hit back in 2019 wasn't just the rabbit ball. I think he's the kind of guy that pops 25 or 30 over a full season's worth of plate appearances year over year, even in a difficult place to hit. So I'd be careful with Sosa if he doesn't play before the end of the weekend, if he's still kind of day-to-day going into the new week. And I would look at DeJong as one of the few maybe widely available middle infield replacements who might be able to surprisingly take advantage of the circumstances around him right now with that red hot St. Louis offense.
And the beauty of looking at these kind of players, especially like DeJong, is you only have a week left. And so if he can start off hot, he really could just continue for 7 days and just keep it going if given the opportunity. All right, Kevin, in New York, Aaron Boone said it was likely that Jameson Taillon would return to the rotation next week against the Blue Jays when he's activated off the IL. Is this a situation you're interested in the final week of play, or is it just too risky?
No, I think I'm a little interested here, even if it does end up coming against the Blue Jays. He's more available than I thought he might be. 76% rostered TGFBI and online championships, 47% on Yahoo. He threw three innings in his rehab start on Wednesday, two earned runs on four hits, two strikeouts, no walks. That's a big thing with guys coming back from injury. That was Wednesday, so he's looking at maybe could have been available tomorrow to do another, or Monday to do another rehab start and then start on the weekend, but that's not what Aaron Boone said. He said against the Blue Jays, Roster Resource has him penciled in for Thursday. So maybe a few less innings, because that would probably be his next outing if that's the way it takes place. We'd only be looking at four or five, but we're at the point if you're looking for a few innings from someone with his talent and his track record and the way he was going during the second half of the season, you're looking at him as your eighth or ninth starter, depending on if you're done throwing closers out there. This week's going to have some crazy lineups for everybody. I could see him being valuable to some players, depending on the situation.
Yeah, it definitely depends on what you're going for in your league. I would also be concerned about how many innings he does go. So if you are looking for that win, Taillon might not be the play here. The Yankees aren't exactly, they're not typically ones to throw out an opener in front of their starters. You might get a situation where Taillon goes three or four, and then, God forbid, Andrew Heaney comes in to relief for a couple of innings. And
I was hoping for one more rehab start Monday and then him getting a start on the weekend. Then he might have been built up for five or six. But that doesn't look like it if it's going to be against the Blue Jays, like Boone says.
All right, DBR, in Minnesota, Joe Ryan was placed on the bereavement list finally after leaving to take away some time for a personal issue. I'm curious, this is more of a overall strategy play as well. With the time away from the team, do you still plug him in your weekly rosters, hoping he makes that scheduled Sunday start at the end of the week, at the end of the season? Or are you benching him for fear that he might be skipped altogether? And that goes for pretty much anybody who's scheduled for a Saturday or Sunday start with no Monday or Tuesday start.
Yeah, I think with Ryan, I would err on the side of him making at least one start. It's possible that he's back for Tuesday against the Tigers, and he gets the Tigers and the Royals. But that matchup later in the week against Kansas City, that's a bottom five, bottom six offense. The only thing the Royals don't do at a great clip is strike out. They're a little bit better than a league average team in that regard, but Joe Ryan misses plenty of bats. Guys just don't see him particularly well. It's not overpowering stuff. We've seen the same pattern at all of his minor league stops. Great K rates, low walk rates. Doesn't seem like guys square him up for homers very often either. Pretty nice home run rates everywhere he's been. So I don't know how well his skill set plays in the big leagues in the long run. I don't know if he's more of a Mike Fiers or something along those lines. He's obviously pitching at a level above that right now. But both of those matchups are good enough. Even if he came back midweek and caught the Tigers before the Royal Series, you're still happy to catch them too. They've been a pretty scrappy team. I'd plan on using Joe Ryan this week just because both matchups are good.
I only have Joe Ryan one place in a DC style or a draft champion style play. And if nothing else, I'm just happy when he got called up. So I'm probably putting him in my lineup just because I want to get is whatever I can out of him in that format. All right, Kevin, going back to New York, DJ LeMahieu missed Saturday's game with a groin injury. If this causes him to miss time in the final week, is there an obvious bat in New York that you expect to get the bulk of playing time for the Yankees?
Well, it meant Rougned Odor was in there today, being Saturday, as we're recording. Gardner leading off for the Yankees. He's been getting quite a bit of playing time anyway. The one thing that I'm wondering for stolen bases throughout the last half of the season, we've had such a hard time finding guys, and Tyler Wade had that couple of weeks where he stole five bases and then he stopped, and then over the past couple of weeks he's stolen a couple more. If he's going to be in there at shortstop on occasion with Urshela at third base now, then that might be a play if you really need stolen bases. But it's really hard to know. We still don't know how much time LeMahieu's going to miss. Hopefully we find some more out before we set our lineups on Monday. And we're not sure. It's even with LeMahieu out, the Yankees still have a crowded lineup with a lot of options. But it is something I would think about. I would think about getting Wade in there for a couple of stolen bases if that's what I need.
It has been interesting to see the Yankees actually start stealing bases, especially in the second half, as they've started getting, or at least relying on that kind of play in the first half of the season. We've said it multiple times on this podcast. When Odor went to the Yankees, we just cut out the opportunity of him stealing any extra bases, and he didn't steal pretty much anything for him when he first got over there. But the Yankees have since allowed guys like Wade to run rampant with the need, and especially during that 13 game win streak. All right, DBR, we'll end in the playoff situation across baseball with the White Sox clinching their division, and then the Brewers, Rays, and Astros could and probably should clinch their divisions either as soon as today, if not Sunday. I'm curious to know, how much consideration do you take into the possibility of star players being sat an extra day or two as they rest up for the playoffs? Like specifically guys like Tim Anderson, who Tony La Russa specifically said would be sitting a little bit extra. Now would they have literally nothing to play for a week? They already know what slot they're going to get. And with these other teams that are on the brink, does that come into mind when setting your lineups for the final week?
Yeah, it's definitely a consideration. It's always difficult to know if you end up with, let's say, a 6-game schedule for the White Sox, since you mentioned Anderson, and you assume maybe Anderson gets a game off in each part of the week. So he plays 4 instead of 6. If your next best option is the kind of guy that's a big side platoon player and he projects for 4 or 5 games, do you take the better player in Anderson, or do you take the guy that you think could actually get to the max end of his usual projected playing time because of the uncertainty? I think I'm still erring on the side of volume. It's a really difficult call to make. It's one of the things I'd probably like to do the least this time of year when I'm setting a lineup. So I would definitely account for that. I think it's really important to look at which teams have a chance to change their seeding, which ones don't. I would say the Brewers have a few guys been banged up for a few weeks off and on. Avi Garcia is probably going to be the kind of player that's going to get some rest. Willy Adames, I think, was dealing with a quad in the last couple weeks, so maybe getting a little rest for him is going to be a priority. I would imagine Yelich, even though they want to get him going before the playoffs, he gets a day or two off probably during the upcoming week. And I would say the one you're watching more closely is Houston, because there's a chance that they could catch the Rays. They play the Rays during this upcoming week. So if Houston comes out of Sunday with a win over Oakland and the Rays are still sitting at 95 wins, suddenly Houston could sweep the Rays and they could have home field in the AL. And that's a big deal. So it's amazing how much this can change day to day as these teams are jockeying for position. So I guess with Houston, I could see them being a little more aggressive than the White Sox and the Brewers, because that situation is a little bit different.
Yeah, it's interesting. Not only Houston fighting for home field throughout the AL portion of the playoffs, but like you also get the decision on who do you want to play in that, in the ALDS. Do you want to play the White Sox, or do you want to play the winner of the AL East, or possibly Seattle coming in there in that wild card game? So I guess I'd be curious to know how. It's not something I've looked into. I wonder how they stack up against each one, and if they have a little bit more control over that, I wonder which way that they would end up pushing themselves.
Yeah, it's weird to me. Like I look at all those teams battling in the AL East for those two wildcard spots, and yeah, the Mariners are right there in the thick of things too. It's, every time I look, I'm surprised that they're even closer than they were the last time. I keep expecting to go the other direction, but the Blue Jays to me are probably the most well-balanced of all the possible AL wildcard teams. They hit like the Astros, like top to bottom. They have a loaded lineup. They don't strike out that much. So I think it wreaks havoc on your pitching staff. No matter how good your starting pitching is, no matter how deep your bullpen is, we've seen the success the Astros have had with a lineup like this over the last 4 or 5 years now. I think the Blue Jays are the team you want absolutely nothing to do with in the AL playoffs right now.
Yeah, and they have as good of a chance as any in a one-game series. Robbie Ray at the top, facing off pretty much against either, whether it's Chris Sale or anybody the Yankees are going to throw out there, Cole, what have you. And then the top three of their rotation is gonna be fine in a full playoff series as well, between Ray, if Ryu can actually come back, and then Manoah, the way he's been pitching, and then Steven Matz, even the way he's been pitching, especially in the last 2 months. So I see what you're saying there. I would probably want nothing to do with the Blue Jays myself. All right, that's going to do it for our news and notes section of the podcast. We talked a little bit. I made sure to talk a little bit about strategy in some of these news items, or at least kind of directed in that way. But so I'm going to segue that into our focus topic. And Derek, I really wanted to talk, listening to you for the amount of years that I've been listening to you, one of the things that you really stress a lot, especially throughout the season, especially in the off season, is just learning from every league that you're in, every situation that you put yourself in, and then how you can come out stronger, a better player in the following season. So I'm curious, and I'd like to talk to you about the things that you've already noticed that you have learned from specifically your FAB decision-making throughout the course of this finally a full season of play as we transition back from the short season of 2020. And what have you learned from the past year's worth of FAB? And you know, how do you think you'll adjust both your mindset and your process strictly regarding FAB going into 2020?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is in the past, I've been a willing participant in Fabapalooza when that comes around, whether that's late April, early May. There's usually at least one weekend. Sometimes there's two weekends where you have a nice wave of prospects that come up. And usually I'm willing to take the chance because I think historically I've done a pretty poor job of spending all my FAB. I've done a better job of that in recent years, but when I first started playing in FAB leagues, I get into the season, I'd have 20% of my budget left. And that doesn't help you at all. You can't take it with you. So you have to be a little better about spending it. So part of my strategy to spend my FAB was, I'm not going to spend it anyway. I might as well take these shots on high price prospects when they come up. I think that's still a mistake. And I think the numbers bear it out. I know it's something that Ariel Cohen has written about at Fangraphs. I think Jeff Zimmerman has studied and talked about this before. If you're looking for research from two disciplined players who win a lot, that's a good place to start. And I think for me, by not going after prospects, I'm going to be a lot smarter in the sense that I'm going to turn more and more with playing time. Like playing time is the thing that I think we are all thinking less about than we should. Even if we're thinking about it a lot, I think we still got to think about it more. I believe that's where you get an edge over the field. We're all using the same sets of projections within reason. I think if you have your own internal set of projections that no one else sees, that's fantastic. But I don't know if your set of projections is going to be that much more accurate than ATC or the Bat or Steamer or Zips or Baseball HQ or RotoWire or whatever everybody else is using. They come out fairly close to each other. And then we have the groupthink of ADP and all those things that factor in too. If you are turning on the wire, thinking more about playing time and less about prospect pedigree, I think you're going to get value there. And you can afford to make more moves that way too. You can take more shots at 2, 3, 4, 5% of your budget if you're not splashing 20, 25, 30% out there for one player or for two players when those big name prospects come around. But the other reason for my reduced interest in prospects in season, especially at that price point, I guess if there's cheaper prospects that come up, you can take your shot on them like you can take your shot on anybody else. I think the gap between AAA and the big leagues right now is wider than it's been probably as long as I've been playing fantasy baseball. I've been playing since the early 2000s, and I've been playing in fab leagues for at least a decade now. And it seems while you can hit on the Juan Sotos and the Yordan Alvarez, like those players do come up and they do have success sometimes. It seems less likely to me coming out of 2020, you know, now than it has in a long time. And I think the carryover effect of the lost minor league season is going to go beyond this year. We saw some really ugly lines from prospects this year. We saw some really ugly lines from guys debuting in the big leagues who we thought were going to be really good players from the jump. Jared Kelenic is probably the most prominent example of that. And I think for me, it's just being a lot more patient with the development of young players. It applies to keeper in dynasty leagues too. So I guess this is not just a fab sort of thing, but I just think our expectations were already probably unfairly high because of some like future Hall of Famers having success right away upon arrival. And now we have this bump in the development curve that's going to throw us off and continue to make those players generally poor values going forward. So that's, for me, the biggest adjustment I'm going to make. I'm not going to sit back and try to hold money for Fabapalooza and not expect to throw 15, 20, 25% of a budget at a prospect when they get the call. I'm going to go ahead and just churn that roster as much as I possibly can with smaller additions with a more playing time centric approach.
Kevin, like throughout this season, obviously you had to make adjustments for a full season, just like everybody else did, compared to your very successful 2020 season where it was a lot shorter. Like, what adjustments did you make? And we talked about adjustments you planned on making, but what adjustments did you find yourself making to go into that longer season or to go back to that longer season? Did you focus on specific types of players that you were successful with, or was it more of just very situational week in, week out?
No, I think it's what I didn't do that I planned on doing. The 2020 season made it very easy to be aggressive in dropping players. And I planned on coming into 2021 trying to stay close to that aggressive. Guys that weren't going to be back for a while, let them go. Or guys not performing, let them go. And that was my plan. And I tried to do that. But there's still some guys. I had Carlos Carrasco on rosters all season long. And I'm like, in hindsight, should have just let him go a long time ago. And to DVR's point, then I have that spot to churn my roster, get guys that are getting innings, get guys that are getting plate appearances that I can plug into my lineup more on a daily basis. I really thought that 2020 gave us a chance to experiment because there was not going to be a penalty. There was no chance of those guys coming back. And to continue doing that, and I didn't do it to the extent that I wanted to.
That makes sense. And I wonder how much, and this is something I plan on looking into a little bit more in the offseason, but how much emphasis there should be or could be on specific positions in Fab, whether it's the, you talk about Fabapalooza with prospects. This year, it was Fabapalooza with closers, especially at the onsite of the season, Derek. And it was everybody is well aware of like how much Julian Merriweather was going for in the first week of the season, first Fab period. But like the two-start pitcher approach, whether or not that is an approach that actually bears the amount of fruit that people think it does. And we talk about volume, and sure, obviously you're going to get the innings and the production, but I do wonder about, and we had Todd Whitestone on the episode last week, and he's done lots of research this year on Fab and kind of the the results of the players that are being taken. But I'd be curious to know, you know, everybody talks about being Gombert early on in the season when they went for that two-start approach. And obviously he got smacked around in San Francisco and put a lot of people back, and that tainted their view on picking him up for the next two-start or picking up Joe Ross or the guys that really hit into your ratios specifically in those two starts. So the volume obviously plays both ways, especially on the pitching side. Did you feel as though that volume play in on the pitching side specifically does more harm than good, or is that still a direction that, or is that a direction at all that you typically go in regardless, just because you're trying to get that volume?
Yeah, I still generally want two start pitchers. I know it can backfire, but I would expect your plus expected value on wins in a two start week and K's for sure. Saves obviously don't matter in this case because we're talking about starters. So I don't think the expected ERA and WHIP could possibly be, if you're doing it right at least, could be enough of a negative to offset the positive win potential in K's. If you go to the absolute bottom of the barrel, we're talking the worst Orioles two-start pitchers. Okay, yes, you should not throw those guys. Like that, there is a line, but I think that line is probably even lower than some people think it is. I think you can push that a lot more. Austin Gomber happens sometimes. Look how good he was after that week. Mm-hmm. You don't want to abandon your process because a guy comes out with his worst stuff and gets blasted by a good lineup. By the way, like when that happened, no one was believing that the Giants were carrying over what they did last year either. We know now the Giants are a legitimately good offense. So that should also be factored into, did I do something wrong? Yeah, maybe the thing we did wrong in that case was we thought the Giants were a cakewalk matchup. That might be the one part of the process that we screwed up in all throwing Gomber out there for that two-start week. But I think as far as the principle of going after two-start guys, I would err on the side of being more aggressive there than you probably have been to this point.
Yeah, we talk about, typically we won't do it on this episode because there's not a future week to talk about, but we usually talk about guys who are lined up to be two-start pitchers, not this coming week, but the week after, trying to get ahead of the game and trying to save a couple bucks, especially midway through the season. And so it's obviously something that's still a valid. And one of the major things that we talk about is these are the matchups that they would have if they keep their two starts. And that's probably, when you're looking at guys that are on that are still available on the wire, the matchups play more of a role than talent sometimes, and whether or not they can pull it out against two bottom of the barrel teams or offenses plays a lot more into how much you're going to bid on a guy and how much success you think they're going to have against those teams, rather than if they are going up against, you know, the Giants, when you know the Giants are good, or the Dodgers or Houston or what have you, or if they're in Colorado.
Part of that too, Adam, is not just following the narrative of how offenses are performing. Actually look at how they're performing. For a 2-month period, the Detroit Tigers were the highest scoring team in Major League Baseball. And if we were paying attention, we should. That wasn't an automatic great matchup for pitching. Tampa Bay Rays, the narrative is throughout a majority of the season was they get by on matchups. They're not this high-powered offense. They're the highest-scoring team in baseball. So don't just follow the narratives. Actually look and see how offenses have been and are performing.
Yeah, just like players, teams as a whole can definitely change that narrative in a couple weeks span.
Yeah.
All right, it's good. A lot of good stuff to think about as we head out of the season and into drafts coming up. Kevin's telling me pre-recording, he's already got a draft lined up for, I think, next month. So we're looking forward to just the way you strategize, especially the back end of your drafts and how you might be able to, you know, save some fab at the beginning of the season. It's throwing darts at the wall when you draft this early in the off season. But as you get closer and closer to the start of the season, how you draft at the back end of your drafts, especially in the 15 teamer, can really affect how you spend your fab early on in the season. So something to consider as we get, you know, into 2022. So without further ado, then let's get some names on the board for everybody to consider as they are setting their final bids. If they are in a situation that DVR talked about, and I've got one of my three fab leagues right now that I'm in a similar situation where I've got I think I've chipped it down to $120 out of $1,000. So I've got like a little over $100 to spend in that league. But then I have another league where I have $4. So it's like, all right, just throwing four $1 bids out there. But let's get plenty of names out there for people to consider. One thing that I think we talked about last week that I'll reiterate is this is definitely one of those. This is the week where you should be playing. You should have plenty of conditional options out there on your bidding process. You really don't want any, you don't want to take any zeros on your roster spots. So if you've got any kind of fab left, make sure you're spending it and have lots of conditions, because you know anybody who's still in contention is going to be placing their bids and they're going to be spending the rest of their money as well. So you're not guaranteed to get exactly who you want at the top of your list. So let's start off with our hitters. We will go in our typical order. We'll start with the power category. So if you are going after home runs and RBIs, Kevin, who are you targeting for the final week?
I'm looking at Hunter Dozier this week, especially in shallower leagues. He's only rostered in about 2/3 of online championship leagues. He is rostered in 88% TGFBI. And I didn't look, but I'm sure higher, even higher, closer to 100 in main event leagues. 19% Yahoo. But he had the 2020. He was one of the players directly affected by COVID. And then this year had the thumb injury to start the season. Coming out of the All-Star break, he started hitting for a little bit of average, but he didn't have any power at all. Recently, he's put it all back together. Past couple of weeks, he's hitting .311, slugging .756. He's got 5 home runs, 10 RBIs, 9 runs scored over the past couple of weeks. The Royals, thanks to a rainout the other day, do have a 7-game week coming up this week because he's not playing every day. With Kyle Isbell there, the absence of Michael Taylor does help that a little bit, but we don't know how long Taylor's going to be gone. But I think he is going to play most days in this final week, and he's been going well for the past couple.
That's great. I also appreciate that you're leading off with a Royal on there, so you've got your KC quota.
It's been a couple done. Weeks since we talked about many Royals.
you're really good about not focusing on your team players. I don't think it'll be the last Royal we talk about today, but it's good that we got to start off with one. Derek, any power hitters out there that you might have your eye on for the final week that could pop a couple home runs, hopefully, for this coming week?
Yeah, if you're looking for some help on the corner, I think Lewin Diaz is still getting pretty good run for the Marlins. I think he's one of those guys that showed us something in the minors. It isn't really taking days off at this point, the middle third of the Miami order, so you might get a few RBIs jumped in there too. Obviously, it's not a good offense overall, but it's more about reps right now than skills if you have to make a call like that. Jose Siri is still out there in a few leagues, does more than just offer power, but if we're thinking about the Astros as a team that could rest a few players, I think his playing time's solid enough anyway, but he could be an everyday guy for them in a week where some of the usuals are not available. Plus Brantley's still hurt, so I think Siri's in a great spot right now with Houston.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they rush, even in the situation that you talked about, if they're trying to chase the Rays, where they want to really rush Brantley back for regular season matchups when you know, he'll be a key part of their outfield in the playoffs. So I can see Siri getting a little bit extra run regardless. So I agree with that one for sure. All right, let's move on to some speed options, some stolen bases, some runs scored, some hopefully some leadoff hitters that are, you know, available out there. D-Var, is there any speedsters out there that are worth taking a look at for the final 7 days?
Yeah, I wish Tyler Wade had a clearer path to playing time, as we were saying a little earlier, because I think when he plays, he runs, and that would be fantastic for us for the final week. But I think it's hard to find steals this time of year. I know Nick Gordon's a guy that's been running quite a bit, and he's offering more power than I would have expected, but you're not picking him up for power. You're picking him up for speed. He's got the pretty slender, typical Gordon build. And I think you're talking about a guy that is on a team that is struggling to score runs. That's always good as far as getting those green lights as well. So those are the two guys that catch my eye. I think with Gordon, I'm a lot more confident in the playing time. Wade, I think we would need to get some bad news on LeMahieu. I was actually going to pick him up for mixed leagues.
All right. And then Kevin, any other speedsters out there that are worth bringing in? I know your Royals have plenty of speedsters out there, but I think majority of them have been picked up by now. So who do you got? Who are you looking
at? Yeah, I think we talked about Nicky Lopez every week for a majority of the season. He's finally rostered in most places. No, I echo exactly what DBR is saying. Nick Gordon would be my first choice this week where available, which is most places. And if we hear something on DJ LeMahieu, then yeah, Tyler Wade. But yeah, I agree with DVR 100%.
Yeah, it's a name that we bring up quite a bit, but Lane Thomas in Washington, readily rostered in most 15 teamers, 100% in the main event, but still a very low roster sip, or at least lower than it should be in like Yahoo leagues with only three outfielders on in your average league as well. So Lane leading off for the Nationals, still doing pretty good things. So keep an eye on his availability as well. All right, we have some decent opportunity ahead of ourselves for the final week. Only less than a handful of games on Monday. So there are, I think there's six teams with a 7-game slate, and that includes Pittsburgh, the Mets, Miami, Kansas City, Cleveland, and Detroit, with Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Cleveland, and Detroit having full week games thanks to their makeup Monday games. And New York Mets and Miami have a doubleheader on Tuesday, giving them 7 games despite the Monday off day for them. There's no teams with only 5-game slate, which is nice. So you don't have to worry about the Tuesday, Wednesday for your hitters benching a really good player who you think is going to play all those games. Colorado splits their series or their week at home and away, where they are hosting 3 games against the Nationals and then off Thursday, and they travel to Arizona to finish off their season. So they will have 3 home and 3 away. There is still 2 interleague series happening this week, with Cincinnati traveling to the White Sox for 2 games. So they will get the extra DH in that series. And then Boston finishes off the season in Washington. So they will lose their DH for the final 3 games of the season as well. So something to keep an eye out there. Also, just something to note for Boston. They, from what I could tell, they are slated to see all lefty starters against Baltimore. So just something to consider. They will have a 3-game set against lefty starters when they travel or when they play Baltimore Orioles to start off their week as well. So with those notes in mind, and then the other notes that you want to bring up, Kevin, who are you looking at that might just have a good opportunity with some good matchups, lots of playing time ahead of them for the final week of the season?
Yeah, even before Michael Taylor went on the bereavement list, Kyle Isbell was getting most of the playing time in right field. So he's playing center field right now and will continue to get playing time in right field if and when Michael Taylor returns. 17.2% strikeout rate since being recalled. And that's very important as far as he is concerned, because on the season, his strikeout rate is still over 30%, which was why he was sent down after surprisingly making the roster to start the season. He's only got 29 plate appearances since returning, but he's slashing .346, .414, .692. He's walking over 10% of the time, has a home run, scored 7 runs. They do face a lefty, which is what he struggled against earlier in the season on Monday, but then 6 projected right-handed starters the rest of the week. In Omaha, the 105 games that he was back down, he did have 15 home runs and 22 stolen bases. So nice opportunity with a week of facing right-handed starters and a full week slate for Kyle Isbell.
That is perfect. This is a perfect bookend of recommendation on your part with Kyle Isbell, as he was one of the top recommendations we made at the very first week or maybe the second week of the season. Kyle Isbell obviously getting sent back down quickly after that, but it's nice to see his name back on this list for sure. Derek, is there anybody out there, again, that kind of fits this bill of a hitter that is walking themselves into extra playing time that we might not have seen recently, or they just have good lefty-righty splits matchups coming up, or they walked in a better spot in the order or something like that you've noticed?
Yeah, Tommy La Stella is out there in about a little over half, I think, of TGFBI leagues. He's playing about as much as anybody available on the waiver wire, in my league at least, so I'm really intrigued because you're getting a guy in a good lineup. I think 5 of the 6 games the Giants have during the upcoming week, they're going to face a right-handed starter, so that bodes pretty well for him. So I think he's pretty usable if he wasn't scooped up for the weekend trip to Coors, which I think drew some people to him probably this time last week. Otherwise, it's just guys like Jack Mayfield. He's not even a good baseball player. He's good in the sense that he's a major leaguer, but he's not good in the sense that he hits the ball hard or that he has a low K rate or that he runs particularly well. But he's playing a ton for the Angels. That team is, you know, a mess right now. A lot of guys still missing, of course, but he is reaping the benefits of that. And if you're just trying to fill in for Edmundo Sosa, who we talked about earlier, Jack Mayfield could actually be the kind of guy that at least collects enough playing time to replicate those counting stats. So not a player that I like from a skills standpoint, but sometimes it's more about the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about the Giants aren't going to be a team that sit players. One, they're still fighting to clinch their division as well against the Dodgers. Plus, they find ways to sit their players throughout the entire season anyway, with the amount of platoons that they've been administering throughout the course of the season. So I don't think that's necessarily something that we have to worry about, at least in San Francisco. But then you have a team like the Angels, who, you know, obviously have been out of it for quite a while, and they have been forced already to play the Mayfields of the world and what have you due to other unforeseen circumstances. But teams along that same nature, they could also be the ones that end up giving their slightly more banged up older players a little bit of extra rest down the stretch to give the opportunity to their younger players to see what they've got for next year. So something to keep an eye on there as well as you're making your decisions. All right, there's a decent amount of hitters to keep an eye out for on your waiver wire. Let's move into our pitching categories. And of course, we'll start with our volume plays, our counting stats, wins and Ks. DVR, do you have either a two-start pitcher or just has a really good matchup that you think they could rack up those counting stats for this final week of the season?
I'm trying to decide if I trust Matt Manning in leagues where he's available. He'll get the White Sox twice, but we were talking about the White Sox as probably a watered-down version of that lineup, maybe for one or both of those turns. The Tigers want Manning to try and figure some more things out. I think there have been occasional flashes of him actually taking steps in the right direction. The overall numbers this season are scary. 47 Ks in 77 innings with a near 6 ERA and a 1.52 whip. But we've seen more recently, had a good start against Toronto at the end of August, had a good one against the Brewers in the middle of September. Wasn't horrible last time out, also against the White Sox. Nice schedule, MLB. What are you doing? Like, why?
Just sometimes it's so ridiculous.
Just on repeat against the White Sox. That is so weird. It's because of a makeup game, I think. But sure. Okay, so it's not totally their fault. But he's one of those guys that at least you can say, oh, this could go right. There's reason to believe that things could click for him, and the matchup might play down a bit from where it has because of the reasons that we've talked about. So he's one of those guys that, especially if I'm chasing, if I'm not worried about ratios and I'm just trying to throw the Hail Mary and close down in Ks and wins and get lucky with the ratios, I think Manning really scratches that itch.
Yeah, I think the part of the schedule thing that annoys me more so is when you see teams this late in the season have that Thursday off day and then the Monday off day, like right after that. It's mm-hmm. like teams don't need that much rest. And that also probably took away an actual off day from another team that might have needed it. And they play 13 straight, 14 straight or something like that. So those, I don't mind seeing those in the middle of the season, but the end of the season to see a team having 4 or 5 off days in, you know, a 4-week period, or even a 3-week period, that's what annoys me the most. Kevin, same question, of course. Who are you looking at for wins and Ks for the final week of the season?
My last Royal for the episode and for the season.
We'll see.
Brady Singer is available in shallower leagues, half of online championships and 2/3 of Yahoo leagues. He's the beneficiary of this 7-game week that Kansas City now has, being in a 6-man rotation. He will pitch Monday and Sunday. He'll be at Cleveland on Monday, who he actually threw in his last outing against last Monday, a nice outing. And then he'll get the Twins over the weekend. Now, the Twins just hit 5 home runs off of him in his outing 2 starts back. However, in his 8 previous outings, he'd given up 1 home run combined. So I think we can consider that an off day, including that 5 home run outing against Minnesota. In his past 6 starts, his ERA is under 3, and he's got over a strikeout an inning. So a pretty nice guy for a 2-start week that may be available this late in the season.
All right, good. Of course, we will skip our future 2-start pitcher section that we normally have on the pod for obvious reasons and go right into our ratio categories. Looking for anybody that, you know, I know everybody looks at this category is something that's almost impossible to like really chip away at with only 7 days to go in the season. Even if you're in a situation where you're just trying to protect your ratios, maybe you're not trying to jump somebody in front of you, but you have somebody right behind you who could jump you, this might be an area in which you want to focus on. So Kevin, is there anybody out there that you trust enough to protect their ERA and WHIP for the final 7 days of the season?
It's hard to believe that the Cardinals are going to just keep rolling, but part of this 15-game winning streak has been Genesis Cabrera and what he's done out of the bullpen. On August 26th, he gave up six earned runs without getting an out. Since then, he's had 9 appearances, 4 of them multi-inning appearances, and given up 0 earned runs. Thrown 11 innings, 12 strikeouts. He's been getting a pretty regular run over the past month or so for the Cardinals. And Luis Severino is available in more spots than I thought he might be. He's rostered in less than half of TGFBI, only 16% of online championships, and had his relief appearance on Saturday, 4 strikeouts in 2 innings. Now, we don't know what his role is going to be going forward for sure. Are they going to try to get him stretched out for the postseason? Assuming that if they do maintain the wild card, Gerrit Cole goes in the wild card game, are they looking at Taillon and Severino as games 1 and 2 when they get to the division series, if Cole can win that game? We don't know, but I would think that Luis Severino is going to get some work this week somehow. And he's available in a lot more spots than I thought he'd be.
Severino definitely would be a better option to follow Taillon and then my suggestion of Heaney coming out that I said earlier. So I could see them piggybacking just to, as they're both obviously on not so much inning limits, but just I wouldn't suggest that they're going to go the full 5 or 6 innings in their next appearance. Derek, if you're in a situation that we alluded to earlier where you're making wild decisions on filling your roster with guys that are just going to be chipping away at ERA and WHIP, who are some of the guys that you might look at that are currently available?
Yeah, I'll try to hit one from each group. I think Camilo Doval in the Giants bullpen is getting some pretty interesting spots where if they have a starter run into trouble, he usually comes in and cleans up the early mess. So he's not really in the mix for saves, but that's a prime spot to come in with some early leverage and possibly get a win, depending on how things flow. He's got a 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio so far in 22 big league innings. I think since he's come back to the club in September, has not allowed an earned run in about 10 or so appearances. So things are absolutely trending in the right direction for him. Just a funky, really funky reliever that the Giants could put into a different role next year, but could actually help your ratios, maybe help you vulture a win or two down the stretch, because as you guys said, every single game matters for the Giants trying to stay out of that wild card game and trying to force the Dodgers into that position instead. I think the Cardinals have an extra guy in Jake Woodford who, if any of their starters go short, he can go longer, whereas Doval is clearly like a short reliever. Woodford was temporarily a starter, and I think with Jack Flaherty still stretching out, we're still going to see Woodford chew up 3 or 4 innings at a time when he gets into games. I think he last pitched on the 21st, so he should have a pretty clean slate coming into this week to pitch whenever the Cardinals really need him to. So he could be one of those guys that goes 4 or 5 innings over a couple of appearances this week. Again, gives you a shot at a win, but also helps in the ratios. And then I'm just curious, in leagues where Jacob deGrom was dropped, do you believe the Mets, do you believe him, that he's going to come back and do anything? Because if deGrom gives us innings, even if it's not a normal start, he's probably rosterable anywhere we're trying to protect ratios.
Yeah, I think this is the week that if you're going to pick up DeGrom, this is the week that it makes sense, because worst case, you still have all those bench spots and you could clear out your entire bench, especially in an NFBC format. And you can just throw, you know, a bunch of $1, $2, $3 bids out there and rotate out 6 or 7, 8 roster spots, because who cares? Nobody's going to pick up these guys that you're going to drop anyway. And you want to take that risk. Not, I don't know, risk, but like you want to take that gamble that he is ready like a day early and then be able to plug him into your lineup on Monday when hopefully maybe there's some news that comes out there and you have a better sense of what's going on in New York. This would be the week to do it. All right. And we will close it out with our saves category, and we will start off the season going after saves. And of course, there's plenty of teams out there that are still scraping away. And it might be the one category that you can make up ground in your league. Throw out a name who's readily available to start. And if you guys have any takes on him, let me know. Tanner Rainey is back for the Nationals, and he looked absolutely terrible throughout the season when he was with them. But since coming back earlier this month, he's had four appearances since being recalled, and he's allowed zero hits. He just let up his first walk on his most recent appearance, two earned runs, which came in one outing, and he has collected a save for the Nationals as well, especially with Kyle Finnegan looking ultimately not very good. And the Nationals actually being, I think, a bit better than I think a lot of people gave them credit for after the trade deadline. He could very well walk into at least one, if not multiple, saves in the final week. Now, he does terrible matchups. Ultimately, he does travel into Coors to start, and then they host the Red Sox, who are fighting for their own playoff berth at the end of the week. But he's looked really good since coming back, and he has the name recognition of being that pitcher that I think a lot of people thought would be the main setup man to Brad Hand at the beginning of the season as well. Tanner Rainey, widely available, 2% rostered in the main event, only 1% rostered in online championships. So he's out there easily, and he should be picked up, I think, readily in pretty much all leagues. Even if he doesn't end up starting, I think he'll be a kind of guy that gets picked up pretty much everywhere. Do you guys have any other closers out there or guys that might vulture a save here or there? Kevin, I'll start with you.
Yeah, Andrew Chafin is still available in a lot of spots. We heard quite a bit about him over the past couple of weeks, and he's still available. The Oakland Athletics have not had a save opportunity yet this week. He did have two saves last week, and on Saturday, he did pitch the ninth in a tie game, and they won in the bottom of the ninth, so he did get the win. So it does look like he is the guy. Lou Trevino has looked better recently than when he was imploding a couple of weeks ago, but he threw the eighth tonight in that tie game. Where Chafin is available, it looks like he's going to be the guy this last week.
All right. And then, Divar, is there any other bullpens out there worth keeping an eye out for a spot save here or there?
Yeah, I'll throw JB Wendelken into this conversation. I think since arriving in Arizona, the control issues he was having earlier in the season in Oakland have faded a little bit. Not an overpowering closer in the sense that he's going to get you 14, 15 Ks per nine, but I think he's good enough to get the job done. I think the reason I'm excited about him is because the Diamondbacks close out the season with a home series against Colorado. The early week pick-ins might be slim as they go on the road to play the Giants, but you could get maybe even two saves in the final 3 days of the season from Wendelken, since he's quietly emerged as an option in that Arizona bullpen to close out games.
Yeah, and if Arizona's going to have a matchup where they could, you know, win some games and probably close games, it would be against Colorado, hosting Colorado, that is. So that's a good call out there. And we will end on our final, again, my favorite category. This is our wild card category. It's pretty much any player that we haven't talked about that doesn't really fit into any position. Typically, it's our stashes. Obviously, with the final week of the season, you're not stashing anybody. I just want to throw out one name. Anthony Goes of Cleveland, a former outfielder with some speed, converted into a 100-mile-per-hour fastball slider pitcher. He's only had two appearances since getting the call up in Cleveland. He's not going to get any saves from Class A in Cleveland, but if nothing else, this is just like, personally, just like this really good feel-good story of this guy who obviously he made a name for himself when he first came up as a speed-first or speed-only bat that you could plug in there for if you're looking for stolen bases in your leagues. And he's now converted to do pretty much the equivalent on the mound, where he's throwing 100 miles per hour with a decent slider combination there, getting strikeouts. Cleveland may give him a little bit of a run to get a little bit of a volume play. And if nothing else, I might just pick him up just to say I had him on my roster. And may not put him in the active roster, but it was a name I really just wanted to, you know, throw out there, people to be aware of. You guys have any, DVR, any other wild card players out there? I think DeGrom would have fit into this category as well in this situation, but anybody else?
Yeah, Shane Baz. I don't know if we'll see him make another start. He's supposed to go on Sunday against the Marlins, but if he were to go again, he'd get the Yankees on the road. And I don't think it's an accident that the Rays have brought him up for the very end of the season and are giving him a chance at some reasonably high pressure spots. I mean, the debut was home, but it was against the Jays. And if they were to throw him at Yankee Stadium on the final weekend of the regular season, that to me says they believe he's got a significant role somewhere on that staff in the postseason. The pitch is all graded out outstanding in the debut. The four-seamer actually was the best in terms of stuff plus. The slider was above average. The curveball was good. And the command was really good across the board too. So Shane Baz, obviously a really exciting prospect. We're not confirmed on that start against the Yankees, but you'd have to think he'll at least make an appearance or two out of the pen if he's not going to take the ball as a starter. And then you get the possibility of good ratios, Ks, or a vultured win that way. So I think he's a good wild card for the final week.
All right, Kevin, we'll end it with you. This is who's your final wild card player option of the season?
I think this is the spot where a guy that's come up briefly a couple of times already fits perfect. The Tyler Wade, with the Yankees and so many other teams having Monday off, it gives us till Tuesday to hear what happens with DJ LeMahieu and see if we may actually get some playing time and want him in the lineup if we need stolen bases. So this is the spot where I think he's pretty viable.
All right. Hopefully we gave you plenty of names to consider as you're placing your final bids of the season here on Sunday night. We'll end it right here with Kevin. Any parting words of wisdom for everybody as they finish off their season and look forward to both the playoffs and their offseason prep for 2022?
No, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago and the article that DVR brought up earlier that Travis Sochik put out today. We've been talking. Anybody that's not paying attention to what Phil Dessau has been doing for the last couple of years probably should. And so check out that article. Start taking notes.
Yeah, what Phil has been doing this year, and as you said, Kevin, in the last couple of years, has been nothing short of miraculous based on his success rates. There's a way to pretty much learn anything you can from him and what he's been doing. You should probably be doing that. You should doing yourself a favor and do whatever you can there. All right, that's going to wrap us up, I think. I'm going to thank Derek Van Riper for joining us on your final episode of the regular season, 2021 season. DR, could you remind everyone at home how they can continue to listen to you and what you're currently working on so they can keep a lookout for it?
Sure, yeah. I'm on the Rates and Barrels podcast, the Athletic Fantasy Baseball podcast, and Fantasy Baseball in 15. Those will all go into different cadences for the offseason. Rates and Barrels goes every weekday on a shorter format for the postseason. Then it goes down to two a week for most of November and December. But you can find me on Twitter at Derek Van Riper. I'm going to do a set of two early rankings. I'm hoping they're ready for the first Monday that we don't have baseball, or maybe we'd have a game 163 that day. No promises though. It's just one of those, it's like busier than usual this September for reasons that are out of my control. So hopefully soon after the season ends, I will say, within 10 days of the end of the season, the two early rankings will be up. My goal is to have them up on that first Monday, but I'm readily admitting I might not get them done by that date.
That's a good window. 10 days. I think that's plenty of time. There you go. If there's a topic you want us to discuss throughout the offseason, let us know. You can email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com by shooting us a DM on Twitter at onthewirepod, or by joining the PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you get access to the Pitcherlist Discord and the advice and banter of all the members there and the Pitcherlist staff who are just waiting to talk baseball all year round, including the offseason, whether there's fantasy implications or not. And that's going to do it for this week's On the Wire. We'll be putting out episodes throughout the off season, though they'll probably be cutting down to about every other week as well. So keep lookout for those incoming, and please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review, of course, is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. It's all spelled out. And Kevin is at HastingKevin. Also, make sure to follow at Pitcherlist Pods to get updates of every new episode of all the Pitcherlist Podcast Network shows, and give them all a listen throughout the offseason. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your final bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Derek Van Riper for joining us on our final regular season episode. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.